Golf Smarter Premium number 541, published on May 27, 2016. Now, as a longtime listener to Golf Smarter, you know that I do my very best to publish a new episode every Tuesday, so I'm sorry that this is a few days late. The reason is that I was in Utah for the 26th annual ING, or International Network of Golf, conference. You met Mike Jamieson a couple weeks back, a couple episodes back, who runs this conference. And so now, over the next few episodes, I'm excited to share with you, as a premium subscriber, all of the really interesting conversations that I had with people who provide golf lessons, products, gear, technology, apps, and even travel opportunities. Each of the premium episodes, and only the premium episodes, will have 2 to 3 interviews in each of them. So let's get started. Golf 8.5 with LPGA Teaching Hall of Famer Kay McMahon and an intro to the World Golf Hall of Fame.
This is Golf Smarter Premium. Here's your host, Fred Green.
Welcome to the Golf Smarter Podcast, Kay.
Thank you for having me. It's a pleasure to be here.
Well, it's great that you're well experienced with the ING conference.
Well, this is my second year, but the first year was great fun. I found ING by going up the wrong escalator and stumbling into the wrong room at the PGA conference at the PGA show. But it's been a great experience. ING is just a fabulous organization, and the people are so friendly, and obviously the connections are even better.
Awesome. Awesome. Tell me about 8.5, your teaching method 8.5. I find it really interesting.
Well, I've been teaching for a number of years. My background is in education, and I just think things need to be simpler. The golf industry seems to be sending out the message that golf is hard, and by a number of different things. And why would people really want to play if something is really hard? And it really still is a game, and it really still is about play. So I've studied the golf swing. I studied everyone's methods. I've studied laws, principles, and preferences. And in my teaching, I realized that we had to make it simpler. That the great doctors, you know, if they use all this fancy terminology, or a lawyer uses all the fancy terminology, we don't get it. So people kept coming to me with the 1,001 things they were in their head that they're supposed to do in 1.2 seconds, and everybody comes that way. So I broke it down into four things before the swing, and only 4.5 things in the swing. And if I do that, all the things that everybody talks about happens. It just naturally happens. And you don't have to have that many things to think about. So people come to me and they go, well, that's too simple. And I go, well, I can make it complicated.
But everybody else seems to.
Everybody else seems to. And I feel like the traditional way that we teach it is like little post-it notes. You give somebody a little tip and then they throw it up against the wall, and then you give them another little post-it note, maybe a different color, and they throw it up against the wall. So pretty soon they have all these little post-it notes, and then they go out and play and they pull one of the post-it notes off the wall, and then that doesn't work and the ball still goes in the woods. So we teach it from a point of understanding why the ball's going in the woods, why it's not.
You're not guaranteeing the ball won't go in the woods.
Pretty much so, but now I'm going to say that no one ever gets worse. They may stay the same, but they at least understand why it goes in the woods.
Ah, that's a huge part of it.
Right.
I think understanding that.
Right. And so if you teach it from a point of understanding rather than people just saying do something, then the ball still goes in the woods. It doesn't make any sense. And so one of the gentlemen that makes great testimonial, he's about a 23 handicap, he said, I used to, when I hit a bad shot, then I continued to have a bad round. Now I only have a bad hole, because he knows what to do to change it. He said it may not always be perfect, but I now know what to do. So it gives him a point of, again, I go right back to the understanding the concepts of the golf swing. And I do think that the swing is simple. We way over-teach it. The game may be difficult in the fact that we've got wind, we've got uphill, side-hill lies, you've got other people you're playing with, you've got different conditions, but the golf swing is simple. It's not that complicated at all.
Really?
Really. And unfortunately today with the internet videos, the little segments of 1.5 minute tips, we get technology, you know, that your 2% of your weight has to be in your right toenail and 3% has to be in your left foot. And, you know, it gets so complicated that we've gained, let's say, 2 million golfers, but we lost 2.5 million. So what's that experience about?
But so, that has nothing to do with everything that's on the internet, does it?
Well, everybody in the industry is talking about making the hole bigger, doing this differently, and no one is really talking about how we teach the game. And I think that we need to, as the millennials will talk about, it's fine the way we've been teaching, but we need to disrupt teaching. We need to make it simpler. I want to disrupt traditional teaching, and that's what Golf 8.5 is all about.
Do you have any sense of how many people who play golf actually take lessons?
No, I don't really have the percentages. Yeah, but I saw a National Golf Foundation said that, I saw a stat that said 80% would like to improve their game. About 23% take lessons. And the tendency is that the thought process is that if I take a lesson, I'm going to get worse. I guarantee people it won't get worse. Because why they get worse is so many lessons put more swing thoughts in their head. Now, they've already got enough in their head, and then they add a few more, and it doesn't really help them. So then they stop doing it, and they have the same things that happen. So we talk about decluttering the six-inch attic. it's really where it all happens. Yeah. And we have had a very high success rate in doing that. And probably where, you know, you're probably going to ask the question of how I came up with Golf 8.5. So
I'll write that down.
Okay, so you
sure
have a question.
How?
I'm helping out here.
Yeah. Prompt me. This is good.
But well, it actually...
am I supposed to ask that now?
No, that's all right. Okay. That's okay.
But Kay,
how did
you come up with 8.5?
I was doing a workshop a long time ago for a bunch of PGA professionals. And I set up like the traditional person would set up in the golf course. I call it the penguin walk. They walk up with these 2 feet and they kind of shuffle and then they try to figure out how far they're supposed to stand from the ball. And then they put their feet down and then they hang onto the club and then they set up with their arms straight and their shoulders are up and they're all, you know, in this unusual position to try to hit a golf ball. And they do hit a golf ball.
And make sure that your shoulders go up above your ears.
Correct,
right?
Like this. Right. And then they tell you, then they go, oh, yeah, I'm supposed to relax.
Yeah.
Or I'm supposed to stick my bottom out, or I'm supposed to bend my knees more, or all this stuff. So in this workshop, the six guys got up, and they told me, each of them told me 2 to 3 things that I had to do just before I could swing. So that's 12 to 18 things already.
And these are teaching professionals.
These are teaching professionals, right. And so then I asked them each to set up. And what I was professing is what I call the 4 things before the swing, is what I call G-cap. You first grip it in the air.
Okay.
You set the club head on the ground. That's the C, G-cap.
Okay.
Which is you're aiming the club head. You then align your feet, and then you get into your posture position. So traditionally, posture is taught first.
Yeah.
Okay.
The whole PGA thing, posture grip alignment.
Well, during this workshop, okay, I've been teaching for 30 years. That's the first time I heard that, but that's how it's taught. So you're absolutely right. So I asked them each to set up, and they each put the club up in the air, hung onto it with their grip, set the club head on the ground, aligned their feet, and they were ready to go. Took one look at the target, and were ready to go. So I said, well, why don't we teach it the way we do it? And they said, because nobody's going to get it. Mm-hmm. And so today, we don't teach posture. It happens automatically. I never teach posture. And to change someone's swing or to change their setup positions, I don't tell them how to do it. I just change the order of how they do it.
Oh, okay.
So if you do something in the right order, each thing is reliant on the next. So I first pick the club up in the air, and we describe how the club should work, what the leading edge has to be perpendicular. And so we put a little arrow on the club.
Okay.
So that
now we're looking, if you're listening to this and you're not able to watch, but we do have this on our YouTube channel. But
the arrow's pointing at the toe.
Toe of
the club face. So it's parallel to the leading edge. Mm-hmm. So the leading edge has to be perpendicular to the ground. If the leading edge is pointing to the right, that's where the ball goes. That's to the right. Leading edge is straight up. That hits a straight golf ball. Leading edge goes to the left. That hits it to the left.
Okay. So you said you're holding it.
It's straight out in front of you.
Straight out in front of you.
Straight out in front of you.
Yeah, we can see that.
There you go. So it's straight out in front of you. So the leading edge is up, left, right. So whatever your hands do, that operates the club head. So they get that right off the bat. And then that balances the club.
Okay.
Okay. So then they set the club head on the ground with the leading edge perpendicular to their target line, and then you align your feet to the club head. So the club tells you where to stand, whether it's a putter, an iron, a hybrid, or a wood. So you're doing the same thing from your putter all the way to your driver. But the club tells you where to stand, and that automatically puts people in their automatic posture position. And they don't have to do anything with posture. We don't teach posture.
It just happens.
It happens.
It happens.
People come back and say, well, where's the ball position? I say, set the club down as it's designed, and the club will tell you where to stand.
Oh, I see. Well, that makes sense. Oh, God.
Oh, you're good. I love it.
I'm sorry I'm so obvious.
But that's exactly the reaction we get. Well, that's too logical.
Yeah.
And they don't have to think about as many things.
Yeah.
That's exactly right, because the club will tell you where to stand. It'll tell you not it's a yardstick, because if someone gives you a typical answer of, well, that you should stand so far from the ball, you can't do that. You have 14 different clubs, and everybody has a different arm length. So how can I give you a standard answer?
Sure.
I can't.
Right.
But if you set the club down, that's your yardstick, as it's designed, it'll tell you right where to stand and right where the ball position should be. So you've just eliminated a whole bunch of stuff that you don't have to teach. Want to go play?
Well, yeah, I do. I do. I want you to work with me on this. But you know, teaching professionals, they're in the business to teach. They can't give their students the final answer, because then they won't come back and they're out of business. So you know what you've created here, and you know, you said you're in education. You come from an education background, and that's probably why you're in the Hall of Fame?
I'm in the Hall of Fame. That's very true. The LPGA Hall of Fame.
LPGA Hall of Fame in teaching and club pros section.
Correct. That's exactly correct.
Congratulations.
Thank
That's
you very much.
Awesome. All right. So you've got your credentials. So, but, you know, you've come up with this thing that's going to put teaching pros out of business.
It's actually going to create more business. It really is. I tell my students, my objective is to make it simple. And this is not really true, to get rid of them. Because if you really think about it, if the idea is to get them on the golf course to be successful. I want to get them out there as fast as I can. And I can get somebody to hit a golf ball in 10 to 15 minutes and have a classic-looking swing, and they then know what to do. Now, what happens with golfers, as you well know, is no matter who you are, you want to get better. So they do come back.
Mm-hmm.
And they want to get better. Now they want to know the finer details and how to play, and then uphill, downhill, side hill lies, and then we've got putting, and then we've got chipping, and then we've got course strategy, and then...
So there's a lot to learn.
There's a lot to learn, and there's a whole bunch of people out there.
First, you got to learn how to hit the ball.
First, you got to learn how to get the golf ball in the air. Yeah. And people do come back, but people go on, and then what it really creates is good word of mouth. I had a successful lesson. I can tell you what I learned. And oftentimes I get people that come to me that have taken some other lessons, and this is nothing against the profession. It's just that I think we really need to take a look at how we teach it. Let's get them on the golf course. I don't want them coming back. If they're coming back, I'm doing something wrong, and I better figure it out, if that makes any sense. And there's a whole bunch of people out there. There's a big market out there, and there's enough for every golf professional.
Well, let's break down. Can we break down the 8.5? Unfortunately, we don't have a lot of time here because we're at this conference, and we snuck you in 15 minutes early so I can get an extra couple minutes with you. And I really hope I can get you back on the show so we can go into it.
I would love to. I would love to.
In greater detail. But can we break down what the 8.5 is? And while I was reading your material, what really fascinated me about it is doing it really slowly to learn how to do it. But let's break it down, what that exactly means, and if you need to stand up or...
No, I'm good. I can probably do it sitting in the chair.
Yeah.
The chair actually works pretty good because it swivels. But
good hip turn, by the way.
We learned... Yeah, it's good. Especially the older we get, the less we turn.
Yeah, exactly.
But we learn things in chunks. If you go back to when we learned the ABCs,
mm-hmm.
Okay, everybody gets A, B, C, D, E, F, and then we all kind of get mixed up in the middle because the teachers went faster.
L-M-N-O-P.
Sounds like a word. See, everybody does the same thing. And then they went slower at the end.
Right.
Okay, the slower you do something, the faster you retain it and learn.
Interesting.
Because because everyone says, well, I don't want to think. And I'm like, no, you want to think, because this is a very important statement. The more you become aware of what you're doing is the only way to get to unaware. It's the only way to get to into the zone. And people don't want to think. So the more aware I am of what I'm doing, the more unaware I can become.
Mm.
It's pretty profound if you really, you know. So
it's deep.
It is deep, but it's like you don't want to be, okay.
I'm
not
being
sarcastic.
It's
deep, and people really get it. And so I say, okay, for the next 2 weeks, you're going to think. And then pretty soon it becomes automatic. And that's why when we do the four things before the swing, the G-cap, every time you do this automatically, you're building your pre-shot routine. Every time you practice, it's G-C-A-P. And they get into a routine. That's done. Then your checklist for the four and a half things in the swing. Everyone has to take the club away. Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, you'll appreciate that. You'll get a laugh out of this. So I tell my little kids my name is K. So I show my letter K, like with my leg. Mm-hmm. And then when you get set up, your legs look like the letter A. And then when we get set up with my arms in the shaft, it looks like the letter Y. See, so it's all about K.
Okay.
Got it. Okay. There you got it. Okay. So actually, when you get set up, your arms in the shaft look like the letter Y.
Okay. I see. Yeah, your arms and then the shaft.
The shaft look like the letter Y.
Yep.
The arrow of the club or the leading edge is pointing up.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So if you take it away, that's always the club head's always in the center of my chest.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So if I turn my chest 90 degrees in my swivel chair here, that club head will always stay within the width of my chest and I will still have a Y. My arms will be the same length. One arm isn't going to be any longer or shorter than the other. So it's not about keeping the forward or the left arm straight. So once I take it away, I turn 90 degrees, my shoulder line, to my target line. That's the first Y.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so when I get to the, I'm getting ahead of myself, but when I jump through, I have another Y coming through.
You finish, okay.
Okay, on the other side.
Mm-hmm.
So that would be a half a swing. So it's Y to Y.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. The finish of the swing is I once I get my extension and both arms have the Y, I then bend both elbows and I have two L's.
Mm-hmm.
So the club head is the toe is up, the ball will go straight. So the club head comes back with both elbows bending and the toe goes down.
Okay.
That's the finish of the swing. The club head is always staying within the width of my body.
But you got you said you got ahead of yourself by going over here. So we were
because
back
I, the way I teach it is you first do Y to Y and then we teach the finish.
Okay.
So okay, I'll go to all the steps. So once I have a Y and I turn back, the arrow's up, it's mm-hmm. still in the center of my chest, I have 90 degrees. I bend my back arm. And I have another L.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Another L.
Yep.
Okay. Toe goes down. So the back arm is more important than the forward arm because that's your power source. So for basketball players, that's how you'd play basketball. You face the target. You bend your arm. And then you bend your arm and you're creating a lever.
Right. Now, this position here with your right arm being a right-handed golfer, your right arm being in the L position.
Correct.
With your hand pointing up here. This some may refer to this or some comment on the chicken wing or the elbow being away from the body, you know, where a lot of teachers want to, so you can get some draw on it.
Okay. If going back to G-cap,
uh-huh.
each part is reliant on the next. So the four and a half things in the swing that if everyone tells you to turn in the swing going back, but nobody tells you when. Okay, or how much.
I love this.
Okay. So the when is by the time the club reaches approximately hip height in your takeaway, your shoulder line will be 90 degrees turned. That's the typical thing. People talk about that as connections. Now my arms are still in front of my chest because my chest is turned.
Mm-hmm.
If I take the club away without turning my chest, I will always have a chicken wing.
Oh, okay.
Okay. So if you first turn with your arms still in front of you, you can, the drill we do is you take a tray or a clipboard,
mm-hmm.
put a glass of water on top of it, okay, and you turn 90 degrees. Way cool, huh?
Light went off. Yeah, okay.
Okay. Then the top of the backswing is what you're creating is a lever system, which quadruples your strength. Then therefore, you don't have to worry about that because your arm is already in line with your chest.
Okay.
You don't have to fix anything. There's nothing to fix. But if you don't get the first turn correct, you're always going to have the chicken wing.
Right.
So therefore, then, when you get to the top of your backswing, is many people let go of the club that's a loss of your power, but that's because the right forearm, the back forearm, is not underneath the club. It has to be perpendicular to the ground.
Mm.
So then when you're coming down, because the back arm looks like a box,
mm-hmm.
okay, elevators are boxes. So elevators have gone up. Elevators are coming down. That's your 2.5. That's 2.5. That's your transition. The technical term is you're retaining the angle. When you come down like this, you're also staying on plane. Okay, as opposed to I do not, this is very important, your hips do not turn first. Your hips do not turn first. If you turn your hips, the average everyday golfer, how many golfers are out there, come over the top of the swing plane, slice the ball, end up with a chicken wing on the other side. The golf swing does not start with the hips. The golf swing starts with your hand. So that's the 2.5 comes down. Then my signature thing is there's no such thing as weight transfer. No such thing. There's no such thing as your hips turn first. We're disrupting.
Brains are scrambled right now.
Okay. So my signature thing is if I have a nylon on tights to the millennials, that nylons are not, okay. And I had a run in the back of my right nylon. Okay. As I came forward, I would then turn and take a look at it. My right knee would then bend. So it's the leg that moves my body, not my body moves my leg. Think of how we walk. We move our feet to move our bodies. We don't move our body to move our feet.
Wow.
So a pitcher on a mound, he's got his foot on the rubber. Mm-hmm. He's not turning his hips first because he's actually pushing off with that right leg.
Yep.
It's the same thing. It's the same kinesiology, physics of the body and how it actually works. Now, I will say this. You get turned, but you're not trying to turn. Because the leg turns my lower half, and as my arms pass my body, that turns my upper half. I get turned, but I'm not trying to turn.
Okay.
You get it, don't you?
I you know what? I do. I really like it. And you gave a little clinic yesterday, didn't you?
Yes.
And I was still on the plane. Well,
we're going to do another one tomorrow.
Okay, because I want to see this, and I'm going to bring the camera out for that, too. Tell everybody who's listening, and it may be one person. You know what?
Listening to you, I think we had a lot of followers.
Well, no, but people listen by themselves. So it is one person.
Oh, I got it. That's good. So,
yeah, they don't listen in groups. They watch movies in groups, but they don't listen in groups. But tell people where they can find you and find more about this.
We have the website is Education Golf, which is EDUKAYTIONGOLF.com. There's also, we have a second website called Golf 8.5, but you have to spell the point out. So it's Golf 8, the number, and T, 5,
number 5,
.com,
okay.
And we are located in Lenox, Massachusetts, which is opposite from Boston, mm-hmm. but we are doing things nationally, and so we're doing golf schools and workshops all over the place.
And you're looking primarily to do workshops for instructors?
We're primarily looking to...
Or do you classes for
classes for
students?
Students. I have, in my classes and my workshops, we have everyone from a scratch handicap to a beginning golfer. Because everyone, it's the same principles. Everyone has different body sizes or whatever. So some of the principles of how we teach it, not everybody can do everything. So we adapt to the person. But it's not just limited to beginners. I've got a young lady who's 17, going to play in her second professional golf tournament. She hits the ball 270 yards, and she probably weighs 112 pounds. But the thing about her, too, is that my objective is for people to know their swings. So when she plays, she doesn't need me. When she plays, she knows what to do. And so it's people come find us, and we hope that they do. We want to revolutionize the traditional teaching.
The whole mindfulness thing is like just awareness. Fred Shoemaker talks about awareness.
I know Fred, good friend.
He's awesome. But he talks about awareness, and that's what this is. So by doing each of these points slowly and learning them very slowly, you become aware of how it feels, where you are.
You become aware where the club head is. The thing that everyone tells you to keep your eye on the ball's not moving.
Yeah, right.
This is the thing that's moving.
But you don't want to keep your eye on that.
Yeah, we have people watch the club head.
Oh.
No, you have to watch it. You use every sensory system that you have between the feel, the sight. So let me look at where it is. Let me see where it is. Let me know what I'm doing. So it's not necessarily slow. It's like when you teach the kids how to drive a car.
Yeah.
They have to go up to the stop sign and stop. Look both ways 3 times. That's an awareness drill. Are there cars coming? Are there cars coming? So you want people to know, where's the club head? Where's my body? Where's the club head? Where's my body? So take it to the point. It's like learning a dance step. Let's do point one, point two, point three. And pretty soon, then you can put it in the blender, like making margaritas. You have to get the parts first. Then you get the margarita. So we have people then do it in parts. Then we do it in medium speed. And then we do it in fast speed.
Well, I'm glad that you said that it's very sensory, because I know for me, I start with stinks.
That's the smell part. Yeah, exactly. Until we make it taste better, right?
Exactly. All right, Kay. Well, again, we got to get you to the next station here, but thank you so much for spending an extra time with me because I really wanted to hear more about this. And I think that this is the type of thing that there are so many golfers that who from, you know, a 5 to a 25 will benefit from this, and they should really go to your website.
Thank you. Thank you. It's been a pleasure. I hope we meet again.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks so much.
Thank you very much.
Now, when you go to golfsmarter.com and check out our latest YouTube videos, you'll be able to watch this interview with Kay and all of the interviews individually in their entirety the same week they are published as podcasts. But with Kay, we have a little something extra. At the close of the video interview, you'll get to watch Kay in action providing instruction to a pretty good golfer who gets even better. Now, up next is an 8-minute interview with Elizabeth Hall from the World Golf Hall of Fame in St. Augustine, Florida, where next year's ING conference is going to be held. Welcome to the Golf Smarter Podcast, Elizabeth.
Thank you for having me.
Oh, it's a pleasure to have you here. You are here representing a topic that I've never really covered and never really...
Really?
I am so excited about this because I know nothing about the World Golf Hall of Fame.
Wow. Well, it's a pleasure to be here.
Give me the elevator start, and we'll work from there.
Sure. Well, the World Golf Hall of Fame used to be in Pinehurst, that you may or may not be aware. Mm-hmm. And it was the vision of Dean Beaman, who was the past commissioner for the PGA Tour, to bring the World Golf Hall of Fame to closer to the tour and have an area for where people could come and visit, like other sports Hall of Fames. And the idea of the World Golf Village was built. And the Hall of Fame opened in 1998. Mm-hmm. It has 35,000 square feet of exhibit space.
35,000 square feet?
35,000
wow,
square feet.
Wow, that's impressive.
Mm-hmm. Located at the Village, we also have the Renaissance World Golf Village Resort on property. Has uh-huh. 301 guest rooms and also has the St. Johns County Convention Center. We have the Caddyshack Restaurant and two championship golf courses, Slammer and Squire and King and the Bear.
And this is all in Florida?
This is all in Florida.
What
it's
part
all,
of Florida?
Actually, St. Augustine. So,
and where is St. Augustine?
St. Augustine.
I'm really dumb on... I'm a West Coast guy, so I'm really dumb about East Coast stuff.
St. Augustine is in North Florida. It's a little south of Jacksonville, and it's actually the oldest settlement in the United States. So we like to call it Florida Historic Coast.
Great. I'm just going to look around a second because I smell some burning toast, and... I'm just hoping it's toast and nothing else that we have to be concerned about.
Yes. Okay.
And so this is for Hall of Fame for professional golf.
Correct. We have 150 members that okay. have been inducted into the World Golf Hall of Fame. And we have an induction ceremony every other year. So next year, we're really excited. It's going to be the Week of the Players. And that class will be announced later this fall.
Oh, wow. And why do you do it every other year?
We do it That's every other year. We used to host it every year. And, you know, being golf, we're it's more of an individual sport. Mm-hmm. A lot of the other Hall of Fames kind of have team sports, so they have a little bigger pool to choose from. So,
and how does somebody get inducted into the World Golf Hall of Fame?
They actually have to be voted in. We have a selection committee okay. And a process that is set up for that.
Tell me about the process. I'm fascinated by that.
So the process is, you know, they have certain requirements that they have to meet. Once they meet those requirements,
the players, correct.
Okay. They are then nominated and put on a ballot. That ballot is then shared with their peers. And we have a sub-selection committee that is actually... chaired by four professional golfers. You may have heard of some of them. Gary Player.
Heard of him.
Yeah. Nancy Lopez.
Heard of her.
Annika Sorenstam.
No, I've heard of Annika Sorenstam.
Sorenstam.
But
yes.
I've never Sorenstam.
You caught
me. I've heard of Bruce Springsteen. So if Bruce Springsteen married or Annika Sorenstam, you'd have Annika
there
Sorenstam.
There you go. but we're very excited to announce that we also have Jack Nicklaus this
wow.
year.
Wow. Okay. Mm-hmm. That's great. That's great. But it's a tourist attraction, first and foremost.
It is. But, you know, first and foremost, I think we kind of want to come across more as an institution. We really want to be known as that source where anybody can come for that golf history. We kind of like to say we're where golf history lives. Mm-hmm. And, you know, anytime somebody is looking from anything from a research paper, from information from one of our Hall of Fame members, or somebody looking to write an article or looking for video footage, we want to be that central source that people come to. So being that institution and really raising the awareness worldwide for golf is very important to us. You know, on top of that, we also have a museum as well that, of course, we love for tourists to come out and see all of the items from our Hall of Fame members. And
what kind of attractions do you have in the museum part? Is it just, you know, the players, or is also history, and is it interactive? Tell me about it.
Very interactive.
Like, if I was walking through, what would I expect walking through the museum?
So if you're walking through, you're first going to start with our Bob Hope exhibit. A lot of people do not realize that we house the majority of Bob Hope's items.
Oh, wow.
Between our museum, and then we also have a traveling exhibit as well that goes all across the country that you can see a lot of his items. Once you go upstairs, you're going to learn a little bit more about, you know, the golf history and how golf originated and started. And it talks a lot about St. Andrews. And then you're going to kind of go into that major moments exhibit that is going to talk about the four majors, and you'll have the opportunity to put your name on the Masters leaderboard. It's a great photo op. You also have the opportunity to look at the four trophies, and you can even put your name on the induction crystal in that exhibit as well.
Very cool.
And to go back real quick, in the St. Andrews area, we do have a putting course where you can actually try your hand at some hickory replicas. Wow. To see how it was to putt back then in that time. We also have our honoring the legacy, a tribute to African Americans in golf. It's the first time that story's ever been told. So it's a great exhibit to really see that story and how it unfolded. Lots of touch screens, videos, very interactive. And it's got a must-see sculpture in the center that I don't even want to run it. You have to go to the museum to see it. It's absolutely my favorite piece.
Can we see any of it online?
I believe there might be a small snapshot of it.
Okay.
But you really cannot get the true feel or effect of it without being in that museum.
And what's the website address?
So the website address is going to be www.worldgolfhalloffame.org.
So it's all spelled out, World Golf Hall of Fame.
Correct, it
There's
is.
No abbreviation on
No
that.
Abbreviation, worldgolfhalloffame.org. And on there, you can each of our 150 members has their own page. So you can see their bio, all their accomplishments, every golf tournament they've won, videos, pictures. You really could spend days on our website and get lost in it.
Is there any attention paid to the history of golf broadcasting?
We do have some golf writers that have been inducted. So what's great about the museum is in Shell Hall, we do have all the bronzes of all of our inductees. And it kind of has snapshots of highlights of about them. But most importantly, the very end of the museum is our locker room. And every single one of our 150 members has their own locker.
Oh.
And if they were living when they were inducted, they actually picked out the items that went into that locker. So you really get a look at their personality.
Cool.
Some of the things are quite interesting. And not everything necessarily has to do with golf. You really get a feel for who that person is.
Yeah.
And you can go through, find your favorite golfer and look through and, you know, see a little bit about
him. So a couple writers, but no broadcasting. You really worked around my question. I'm going to get back to it. No broadcasting, no broadcasters, no networks, no Jim Nance, not that yet.
Well, you can actually
go
through.
But it's writers, yeah.
We have writers, yes.
But no broadcasting.
I cannot say 100% certainty.
And probably no podcasting either.
Well,
okay,
you know,
so
that is the future.
It was great to meet you.
Nice
Thank you so
you
much.
As well.
Have a great holiday weekend now that the golf season is in full swing. Yeah, sorry. That was intended to be a pun. Follow us at Golf Smarter on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, LinkedIn, all the social media apps that are out there. And if you have any questions, comments, or suggestions, there's two options there. And from now on, why don't you use hashtag Golf Smarter in all your social media posts so that we can all be part of the conversation? Or, of course, If you want to talk to me directly, click on the Hey Fred button at golfsmarter.com.